Hi there, and welcome to Scandalous. This is a podcast about the most scandalous people and events in history. I'm your anonymous host, M, and each episode I'll be bringing you stories of the disgraceful, heinous, outrageous, scurrilous, shameful, shocking, and slanderous. Welcome. This is our final episode on Louis the 14th. If you haven't heard the previous ones, I would recommend you go back and listen to them so you know what is going on in this story. Louis would have a few dalliances after Angélique's death, but as he reached middle age, he was finally ready to retire his role as a galant and settle down into monogamy with his wife. Maria Theresa was ecstatic to finally have the man she loved to herself. She had become friends with Françoise, whose piety was appreciated by the queen, and she couldn't be more grateful to her for helping sway the king toward this course of action. She was so grateful, in fact, that she gave Françoise a beautiful portrait of herself framed in diamonds. Athenaïs kept her apartments, but Françoise was suddenly given her own near the king as well. She was also made a lady of the Dauphin's household, a high rank at court usually held by a noblewoman. Athenaïs and Françoise were now on the worst possible terms, as one could imagine. They had their quarrels off and on for years, mostly over the raising of the children and due to Athenaïs' jealousy. They would fight fiercely, then make up again, just to be at each other's throats once more a week later. By now, Athenaïs absolutely loathed Françoise, this former friend she had elevated to such a high position. Her tempers became tiresome for Louis, who, as we saw, would eventually seek refuge elsewhere. On one occasion, reportedly, as Athenaïs passed Françoise on the staircase going to their rooms, Françoise remarked to her, "Madame, you are going down? I am going up." Indeed, Françoise suddenly seemed to be the new rising star of Louis' universe. Unfortunately, Maria Theresa didn't get to enjoy being Louis' only romantic partner for long. By 44, she had given Louis 6 children, only one of whom survived to adulthood. And one day, after feeling fine, she developed an abscess on her arm. It became infected, and she died very suddenly, cradled in the arms of her friend, Françoise. Louis seemed mostly unmoved by the queen's death. Françoise's grief was immense, and Louis chided her for it teasingly, as Françoise seemed to have felt more grief over the queen's death than the king had. Louis was still young enough to remarry, which the courtiers assumed would happen. They gossiped for a while about which royal princess would receive the honor of becoming the new queen of France. Louis may even choose a French noblewoman of the court as his second wife. Athenaïs believed Louis may finally take her as his wife, she who had already reigned as the queen of Versailles. Everyone was quite confused when Louis ripped the queen's apartments down for his own use and did not make new rooms for the new queen. It was Louis's way of letting his people know, in his way, that there would be no new queen. Louis already had plenty of heirs. Having a new royal set could cause confusion and precedent in sibling rivalries, which were bad enough as it was. He had no need for more children, nor the inclination to marry another foreign stranger he may not end up liking. This time, Louis would marry for himself, and he would marry for love. He would marry his longtime best friend, the woman he had been half in love with for years, Françoise Madame de Maintenon. None of the courtiers had even considered her as being in the running for potential mate. But, after sampling all types of romantic and sexual love, Louis would finally settle with the woman he could love and admire as much as he had his mother, the devout, respectable Françoise, who was still quite beautiful by this age. It seems living a modest life and not having any children, while still being perceived as motherly, had worked wonders for her. As the shallow allure of charm and youthful beauty faded, a relationship based on solid friendship became Louis' preference. In the future, he would literally refer to Françoise as Madame Solidity or My Solidity. With this marriage, Louis was finally able, without sin, to consummate his love with Françoise sexually and romantically, and let their deep friendship bloom into true love. And they would remain together in monogamous and sinless bliss until Louis's death over 30 years later. Indeed, well into her 70s, Françoise was still complaining to her confessor that Louis wanted to make love every day, sometimes twice. Apparently, Louis was quite a vigorous man. Or perhaps they had kept some of those little love potions for future use? The marriage was never formally announced. A form of marriage existed at the time, called morganatic marriage, which meant that the marriage was only recognized by the church, not the state. In this way, Louis was able to marry Françoise in the eyes of the church, but she was not legally his wife, and they were able to marry in secret. Neither of the pair ever did fully admit to having married. We only know that the marriage must have happened only because of subsequent hints and behaviors. Louis now referred to Françoise simply as Madame instead of using her full title, among other small signs. It must have become slowly apparent to the courtiers what had happened after the Queen's apartments were carved up. Athenaïs also lost her infamous suite of rooms at the palace. She had left Versailles in a storm of anger and told the king that she was thinking of leaving forever. Louis's reaction was to give her apartments to their eldest son, who was his favorite child. This son had been raised by Françoise and was wholly devoted to her. He had no feeling for his absent mother. He was so impatient to claim her rooms that he apparently had her furniture thrown out of the windows. Athenaïs eventually did leave the court for good and retired to a convent. The court was rather astonished by Louis's decision. Many refused for years to believe the marriage could have actually happened, most notably Louis's sister-in-law, his brother's second wife, who absolutely despised Françoise for her lack of noble royal blood. French kings had acknowledged mistresses, and this could be acceptable by the French court and people if she were glamorous or high-born, like all of Louis's acknowledged mistresses had been. But Françoise had been born into a family of poor country gentry, and her father had a dubious past. She was only a refined enough lady to move in court social circles because she had been raised by more wealthy family members and had been taken up by the fashionable ladies of France, like Athenaïs, for her beauty, intelligence, and ability to amuse. She was not what the snobbish court thought of as royal mistress material, never mind Queen of France. It was fortunate for Françoise, perhaps, that she seemed to have no desire to actually be queen, and Louis had no desire to make her one. She constantly complained about how much she hated Versailles and the sinful lifestyle the courtiers lived there. She mostly kept to her own rooms, which Louis began to use as a sort of private office, and did not participate socially at court. Neither did she attempt to take a role of precedence over others at the official events she did attend. As I said before, Françoise was not Athenaïs. She would not seek to rise above the privileged role she had already attained, nor make a spectacle of herself. She viewed her role as a holy destiny. She would sacrifice her contented state of virginity and devote her life to the king to save his immortal soul. She would never be able to admit to herself that she had ambition or enjoyed her position of importance. In the end, Françoise made a very good wife to this older man who needed a woman like her in his life. He would have great need of her in the future. For female amusement, Louis had a new favorite, a doll-sized Savoyard princess that had come to the royal court to grow up there and eventually marry his grandson, the Dauphin. Louis fell in love with the little 11-year-old the moment he set eyes on the pretty, lively Adelaide, who would be the light of his life during these years. Though she was technically not French, she had been raised in Savoy by a French princess and spoke perfect French, though apparently she curtsied like an Italian. She was a mischievous little thing and a constant chatterbox who amused Louis endlessly with her youthful silliness. She was always with Louis, and Louis was sad when she was not around, so much so that he even allowed her to accompany him when he spoke to his advisors, something he didn't even allow his own son to do, and she constantly rummaged through Louis's personal papers for amusement. Adelaide smartly took Françoise up as a mother figure, charmingly referring to her as her aunt. When she turned 12, she married the young Dauphin, making her Dauphine and future Queen of France. Though Adelaide had a few of her own small scandals I may mention someday, under the watchful eye of Françoise and the King, she eventually grew into a lovely, serious young woman everyone in France seemed to be glad to have as their next queen. Her husband, the future king, adored her, and she gave him 3 little heirs, making Louis a great-grandfather. I wish we could end the story here. Had Louis died in 1711 or so, he could have died at the height of his power, authority, and overall contentedness. He was happily married, with sons and grandsons and even great-grandsons. Everything seemed set for a glorious future. But, in 1711, Louis's eldest son, the heir to the throne, who had been especially beloved by the Parisian people, died, making his grandson and little Adelaide the new heirs. After this blow came the next. Adelaide contracted the measles and died at only 26. Her husband, now heir apparent, had absolutely adored his wife and had kept by her bedside during her illness. He caught the illness from her and died as well only days later. The overwhelming grief of the double funeral for the Dauphin and Dauphine in Paris was never forgotten by those who witnessed it. And as if that wasn't enough, the couple's 2 eldest children also subsequently caught the illness and died. 3 heirs to the throne of France had died in only 11 months. Louis's devastation can only be imagined. All that was left of Louis's legitimate line was his youngest grandson, who would eventually be crowned Louis XV. In addition to the loss of his loved ones, Louis had also nearly bankrupted the country with a series of unnecessary and disastrous wars. And though he lived on for many years, after Adelaide and the Dauphins died, it was as if Louis's heart had died with them. Louis was no longer the shining star of France. The people of Paris mocked him with a satire of the Lord's Prayer. Our Father that art in Versailles, thy name is no longer hallowed, thy kingdom is no longer so great, thy will is no longer done either on earth or sea. Give us our daily bread which we can no longer obtain. Forgive our enemies who have beaten us. Louis hadn't known it when he chose Françoise as his life partner, but it was a small blessing that he had someone in his life who could support him through his grief and old age. Louis lingered on with Françoise by his side, finally dying in 1715 at the age of 76, having told his young great-grandson on his deathbed, "Soon you will be king of a great kingdom. I urge you never to forget your obligations to God. Remember that you owe him everything. Try to remain at peace with your neighbors. I have loved war too much. Do not copy me in that or in my overspending. Take advice in everything. Try to find out the best course and always follow it. Lighten your people's burden as soon as possible and do what I have had the misfortune not to do myself." Athenaïs had passed only a few years earlier, having committed herself to doing good works in her old age. Françoise outlived them all, finally passing away in 1917 at the age of 83. It was now Louis's many children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren's turn to be the scandalous creatures of Versailles, and that they were. Don't worry, I plan to come back to the palace at some point and tell you all about them and their scandals there. Through his great-grandson, Louis's heirs continued to rule until the French Revolution and beyond. The current pretender to the French throne, as of this recording, is a Bourbon directly descended from Louis via one of his grandsons, who became Philip V of Spain. That was one of the scandals we didn't get to this time, but maybe in a future episode. Versailles also continued to exist as the main French royal residence until the French Revolution, nearly a century after Louis's death. It is now one of the most popular museums in the world, receiving over 10 million visitors annually. It has lived on as a monumental symbol of the Sun King's lasting influence and legacy. All right, now it's question time. In previous episodes, I asked people to reach out on Twitter or wherever to ask me questions about Louis XIV. I got a few responses, so I'm going to answer a few questions. The first one comes from Spooky Waffles at Waffles the Magic. They ask, what other great persons of history do I think would have held the king's attentions and affections? How do I say this one nicely? I think really any woman who was beautiful would have gotten his attention at some point. Specifically and more relevantly, I think if he had ever lived long enough or somehow had gotten to meet Marie Antoinette, he would have been absolutely charmed by her, especially when she was younger. I know she gets a lot of flack throughout history, but she actually fulfilled the role of Dauphine at Versailles exactly as Louis would have wanted. She was fantastic and sparkling and the head of everything social that was going on, and she brought a grandeur to the palace that had been sorely lacking in the previous generations. He was never happy with any of his Dauphines completely with how they acted in their roles. Even Adelaide, who he adored, he constantly complained that none of them ever wore enough jewels or were quite grand enough for him or participated in the correct society. The next question is from François Vatel himself. Wow. Didn't expect us to have any famous celebrities writing in, but this is exciting. He is at Vatel1675 on Twitter. He asks, how was the court life transformed when the king's dominant influence changed from being hedonistic with Athenaïs to being sober with Madame de Maintenon? The feeling of the court really did change, and it's hard to put into words how much, really, the whole mood of the thing, especially after Angélique died. Louis was just not interested in the party life anymore. He was getting older, and not just that, but the whole atmosphere of culture and society in France at the time, in the later period of his life, was becoming much more religious. And I think this trend probably influenced his decisions as well. The court became so boring that all of the fashionable and exciting courtiers went back to Paris, and that became the center of fashion for a while until subsequent heirs brought back the fun at Versailles, as we will see if I ever get to them in this podcast. And our last questions come from the Girl in the Tiara. On Twitter, she is at Girl in the Tiara, and she has an excellent blog that I love about all things female royalty. And she asks, in your personal opinion, do you think Louis actually married Madame de Maintenon? And yes, I do think unequivocally he must have, because if he hadn't, the church would not have been happy with him keeping Maintenon just as a mistress. And they seemed to be extremely happy with her because they sent her gifts and she had the right actually to visit the Pope, if I remember correctly. And the Catholic Church also gave her the right that a queen would have to visit convents in the area that were closed to anyone else, basically. So I believe, regardless of any other evidence, such as how he treated her with etiquette and other signs and things that he said over the years, just the reaction of the church is enough to prove to me that they must have been married at some point, even if it was in secret and just a morganatic marriage. And her second question is, what did the rest of the court think about Madame de Montespan's kids being legitimized? Well, they were not happy about it because they were all there seeking the best marriage prospects they could. That was one of the main reasons to be at Versailles. And his children being legitimized meant that they became royal princes and princesses who would be married to the best of the other royal princes and princesses. So a lady who may have gotten a better marriage proposal may get not so great of one because one of Louis's bastards, who were subsequently legitimized, took the man that she was possibly looking at. So things like that. A lot of problems with precedent. His other children were not happy about the fact and quarreled quite a bit about different precedents. They were a whole other story that I'm sure I'll get into at some point. Toward the end of his life, when Louis only had his great-grandson left as his potential heir, he actually considered adding his illegitimate children to the line of succession, like, legally, but he decided not to, I think, in the end, because it would have really upset the Orléans branch and the other people, the Condés. I can't even remember at this point. There were so many in the running, but whoever was next after the little great-grandson wouldn't have been happy with all of that. And it was already confusing enough, so I guess that's why he decided not to do it. I hope everyone enjoyed this little question and answer session. I sure did. I'm also going to be putting a bunch of pictures of paintings and different things on both Pinterest and Instagram, so anyone interested in seeing visual portrayals of the people we've been talking about, feel free to go check it out. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them on the next episode. Just send me a message on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of the places. We are on all of them as Scandalous Pod or Scandalous Podcast. Just look us up. You'll find us.